Hello everybody and a warm welcome to another episode of Construct the Future. Today's guest is the founder and CEO of Cobot, Henrik Lund Nielsen. The Danish startup is causing a lot of excitement around its already very sophisticated 3D concrete printing technology. Cobot counts Perry and GE as its strategic partners and is one of the most interesting startups in the construction industry I could find to this very day. Let's get started.
Hello, Henrik. I'm very happy to have you as a guest today because I believe you are a realistic dreamer. And I explain what I mean by this. You studied in Copenhagen Business School. After that, you made your MBA at Island International University in San Diego, scoring a GPA of 4.0. For all German listeners, that's like a 1.0 in Germany. That you worked for 10, 15 years in the management of different companies to start your own investment firm for startups. And in the past 7 years, you focused mostly on 3D printing technologies. You definitely took some more turns than the average person, one might say. How did this evolve?
Well, yes, maybe. Well, I grew up I was convinced from I was young, and especially over my time in business school, that I was the one of the selected ones that always would win and would have had to special talents, etc. So I saw myself as a young man becoming the CEO of Carlsberg or something similar, a really big CEO position. And then these were the guys that I looked up to and aspired to and so on. And so, I went on a fast track management program with the help of Scandinavian Tobacco Company, which at that time, before cigarettes became very unpopular, at that time was a high prestigious company that had actually a management program for young talents. But they had one requirement. Which was that I had to have an MBA. So I applied while I was in business school and was told I had to take an MBA. So I went down and took an MBA, and then I applied, and then I got a job. And within half a year of my employment, I was thrown out as a general manager for 80 people already. And this was at the age of, I can't remember, 27 or 28. So since then, for as part of 15 years or so, I only been into general management, and I grew into larger and larger positions. And in the end, I managed my own group belonging to Velux, which is very well known in Germany, of course, for their roof windows. And Velux had acquired another company within vertical blinds. So sonnenschutz, as you would say in auf Deutsch. And I grew that company to be, 14 different subsidiary companies and 1,000 employees. But I found out that I, in fact, was getting further and further away from where I really had fun. And that was in the sandbox, so to say. So when I was playing around with new product concepts and new marketing concepts, business development, etc., that's what really made me tick. Rather than this financial analysis and all this stuff, which I was very good at and was trained to do and had been doing for a long time in my career. But I just felt, hey, now I knew this shit and now I wanted to do more like the value creation side. And the value creation side, sorry to say, is not in the financial management or in the administration. That is really into business development, product and market development. So that's what I wanted to focus on. And that's when I took a discussion with my wife and said, I know we've been used to that. I've been paid a lot in fixed salary. But I don't really want to do this. I want to create my own companies and see where I can take this to I would be extremely proud if I could make an industrial company in Denmark with, let's say, 500 employees or whatever, something like that. And so I embarked on that route.
And for the past 7 years, 8 years, right, you're focused on 3D printing technologies. How did this come about?
Well, it actually came over, I started more or less mainly in mobile phones and the mobile internet and so on back in the days where this was unheard of. So this was back in the days where a mobile phone had a screen of black and white and three lines. And I told my friends that, hey, you know, 10 years from now, we will be going more to the internet using our mobile phones than our laptops. And they were all laughing at me saying this was impossible. And I said, well, you know, you wait and see, for technology will develop and this will become possible. And it did. But anyway, so I started there, and then I went over recycling. And one of the recycling technologies I was involved in was gypsum recycling, gips recycling auf Deutsch. And and then one day in 2012 or 13, I read that you could 3D print in gypsum. And I was like, hey, hang on, you know, I'm the professor of gypsum. I've never heard about this.
Yeah.
And what is this 3D printing? And so I started looking into it, because I am entrepreneurial and opportunistic by nature and explorative also by nature. So I wanted to figure out what was this 3D printing. And then a whole new world opened for my eyes. You know, I learned that you could 3D print gypsum in polymers, on plastic, if you like, in metal and in concrete and so on. And I just decided, hey, you know, now we're seeing it again, like we saw when the laptop came around. And I was old enough to remember that, because I had one of the first laptops in Denmark. A whole business suddenly centered around the use of a laptop. That could be database programs, or it could be financial economic programs and so on. And so all of the companies that was involved originally there, in different aspects of using this new technology, the laptop actually became very valuable. And we saw it again with the mobile internet. So I co-founded a company within the mobile internet, value-added services, so to say, value-added services that you could get over the internet, but to be received on your phone. And I paid $20,000 in startup capital for 15%, and those €20,000 turned into be 2.7 million euro afterwards when we sold the company, where I was the chairman, the working chairman for 7 years. What was your original question? Sorry. Yeah. Yes.
The original question was how you came into 3D printing, yeah. But I think that became very obvious, and I would like to maybe even make the conversation now a bit more specific also about Corebot,
sure.
Your last and most important venture probably.
Sure.
Last year, like you found, if my data is correct, you founded Corebot in 2017.
Yeah, that's correct.
Perry, let's say, entered the deal in 2018 as a strategic partner.
That's great.
Then last year, you had 5 million of sales. And now this first quarter of the year, you had already doubled the size.
Yeah, so, now, to be more correct, we had more like 1.5 million in 19, 3 million in 20.
Mm-hmm.
And this year, we are looking like more than 7.
Okay, but what was, let's say, the tipping point? Was there a technological tipping point? Was there a sales structure tipping point? What was it?
No, there were a few critical, we discussed that internally and say, you know, we've been on a fantastic journey here, and the whole world now wants to speak to us, not only you, Marcus, but really the whole world. we get requests from all over the globe, you know, from Japan to Chile, just to give you an idea, going that way around the earth, not the short way.
Yeah.
So, and we have a global customer basis, right? There were a few critical incidents. One of the ones was we started by researching into the industry. And after we've done the research, so we got a grant from the Danish government. That was extremely important that we got that grant, because that allowed us to actually study the industry for 3 years. So from 15 to 17, we actually studied the industry. And what we learned, we were not very impressed by, because we learned that there was a lot of hype about 3D printed buildings, but that the technology applied in these 3D printers was really primitive compared to what we knew. And we were 3D printing experts, because we'd been into 3D printing since 2014. And I have guys that have known and been working with 3D printers for more than 20 years. So we were really not impressed with the level of technology applied to the construction, to the big size printers. On the other hand, we could see, wow, the whole world is speaking about this. There is a lot of potential here if we apply the right technology. And so after we did this research and we had a couple of conferences, and one of the conferences, we invited all the European projects and they came here and informed about what they were doing, projects being, you know, competitors, today competitors and universities. And they all spoke about 3D printing a building, but nobody were specific. Nobody said, we want to do this in Europe on this and this date. So I looked at my guys afterwards and I said, did you hear anybody putting a date on when they would do the first building in Europe? And they said, no, they didn't hear it. So I asked them, have we now learned enough? So we are so good. And are we so good that we can make a own construction printer and we can 3D print the first building in Europe? I said, and they said, hell yes, you know. And I said, this is not going to happen because, you know, something is going to stop us. Either it's the authorities or we can't get a site or whatever. But do you want to go for it until something stops us? And they said, hell yes, they wanted to. You know, this could be fantastic. And so we did it. And within 6 months, we started printing the bloody building. And everything just fell into place. So printing that building as a demo project, costing, you know, 150, 200,000 euros. And as my board were telling me, Henrik, what is the economic arguments that you can outline for doing this building? I said, I really can't.
Lighthouse but I can project. Tell you
that it's a very valuable position to have 3D printed the first building in Europe.
And that
will lead to a lot of interest for our technology and so on. And so we did it, and it led to this all of this interest. One of the interests that came was from General Electric, from GE, in the summer of 18. And so I anyway had to go to the US in the fall of 18. I had to go to the West Coast, and they are on the East Coast. And I actually had to go on vacation with my family. And I said to them, listen, I'll go one day early. So I'll meet you over there at the West Coast because I want to go and do my best towards landing GE as a customer because that would be fantastic. And so I went one day ahead. I spent an entire day with GE. And I think that meeting was what convinced them that they want to work with us. So that was also a very critical point. And then, of course, we also in 18, we finished the development of our second generation printer. So in 17, we did our first generation printer. And 18, we did our second generation printer, which was super good and is still state of the art. And we've still improved it and so on. But that printer is just so well made that was a trigger also for, you know, a lot of the positive things. And among other, it meant that Perry joined as a shareholder. So that was a force critical thing, because with Perry came the credibility that this was a company involved in conventional construction that basically said, we can't beat these guys. So we want to join them as a shareholder.
Yeah.
So that was extremely important as a quality stamp on our organization and on our technology. So I think in total, these four things have really been critical events in our development.
One more question to the last event with Perry. This is kind of a strategic investor, a strategic shareholder. Have you also thought about raising venture capital?
No.
Or does this really make no sense in this case?
I never believed in the venture model where you take in, let's say, financial money without the insights into the industry that you're in, mm-hmm. and you burn a lot of cash. That's not my style.
Mm-hmm.
Prior to that, we started this recording, you called me old school. And in that sense, I'm old school.
In a positive way to everybody.
Yeah, don't worry, I don't get offended. You know, but I run this company in the old school way. That means, you know, we have to look out for the bottom line. We cannot just burn cash. It has to make sense. And the best sense you can get out what you're doing is actually you have customers willing to pay for what you're doing. So hence, that's our way of managing. And of course, the downside is maybe you cannot then grow fast enough and you need more resources to exploit all your great ideas and product development plans and so on. So that is the downside. But luckily, we've been able to grow so fast that we have been able to fund the R&D projects that we want to and the market development that we want to at the speed that we want to. I would actually be nervous for if I did it much faster than this, then that we would spend a lot of money in vain, we would do a lot of wrong things and so on and so forth.
Yes, Henrik, I try to make my episodes very compact, and I think we got a very good impression of you here. I got a very good impression of you anyways. Wrapping up this conversation, are there any last remarks from your side, anything you want to tell to the audience, what you think is important with regards to entrepreneurship or entrepreneurship in construction maybe?
Yes, you have to look for these signs of that. If you have a truly entrepreneurial and disruptive idea, especially if it's disruptive, you have to look for these signs of somebody that actually knows the industry, because most often disruptors are coming from outside of the industry, that you get some kind of buy-in to your ideas. Obviously, it can be very difficult initially if you just have a concept. You cannot physically show anything. You cannot show a program, how it works, or whatever it is that you're working on. But still, you know, you get the initial customers, you get buy-in to your thoughts, and so that you will get more and more confirmation that your disruptive ideas are really working. And you know, I've kept my skepticism. So although we went ahead in 17 and 3D printed the first building in Europe, I was by no means certain that this would become a valuable company for sure. In 18, when Perry joined, I got a little more certain. In 19, when GE joined, I got much more certain, and so on. And now I'm totally convinced that we will be part of the future of construction. Whether we will be 10, 20, or 30% of construction is not so important, because we are addressing a gigantic market anyway.
Thank you very much, Henrik. I think these last remarks sum it up greatly. Thank you for the interview.
Thank you for having me.